Hello, I am Amber and welcome to the first ever episode of This May Get Hairy. I'm super excited. In this episode, I chat to the brilliant Emmy-nominated actor, Anthony Carrigan, who you may have seen on the hit HBO show Barry. If you haven't seen it, you need to see it. He plays this camp, funny Chechen mobster. It's seriously, seriously unique. And in the podcast, we chat about that whole audition process and how he came up with that character. And we kind of really dive into that, which was amazing to kind of hear that firsthand. I felt quite special. I contacted Anthony a little while ago over Instagram. I did it. I slid into his DMs and asked him to be on the podcast. And to my surprise, he said yes, which I was just so chuffed about. He's been such a massive inspiration to me. And I know so many people within the alopecia community. Anthony was the first person I saw on the TV that looked like me. I think we can forget just how special that representation can be, because it makes you feel that, you know, nothing should stop you and that you can do anything you want to do, even though you have no hair, just like me. And we chat about a lot of things in this podcast. We speak about his upbringing, obviously his hair loss journey, and we speak about his career generally and how that blossomed and the ebbs and flows within that. And it was also really, really cool for me to be able to speak to a man about his alopecia, because I know what it's like as a woman existing in the world hair-free, but I really wanted to hear it from a man's perspective. So Anthony did just that, and he spoke so honestly and he just was so vulnerable, which I'm just so grateful for. And when I was listening to it back, I felt my voice go a little bit crackly and I think I was actually getting a little bit emotional, but Anthony kind of held that for me, which was just really beautiful. He dialed in from LA in his morning. I was chatting to him in the evening from my husband's office, and actually in the middle of the episode, by the way, the lights go off. So if you hear us having a bit of a giggle, that's what's going on. Anyway, I'm so excited to introduce our amazingly talented first guest, Anthony Carrigan. Anthony, thank you so much for dialing in from America to join us in This May Get Hairy. It's such a pleasure to meet you, and I'm so honored that you chose to come on this podcast, as I'm sure you're inundated with requests to share your journey and share your story. So I'm just so honored that you chose This May Get Hairy. And I've been stalking you online for the past couple of weeks, so I kind of feel like I know you a little bit, but I'm looking forward to kind of getting to know you a little bit more. And I've been watching loads of the clips on your amazing car that you created for Barry, so thank you for just making me laugh over the past 2 weeks. I've just been giggling whilst watching YouTube, which has been awesome. And I also just wanted to say that you have been and you are such a big inspiration, seeing someone that looks like me on the TV. I've never seen anyone that looks like me represented on the TV before. And I think we can take for granted just how powerful that representation can be. And it's just amazing. And it kind of reminds you that just because we have alopecia, it shouldn't stop us from doing anything we want to do. So for me and all the alopecians out there, we thank you for being you and just killing it and just being you and rocking on. So that's right, just fantastic. And today we'll chat about, of course, your hair loss journey and your alopecia and all that. But I'd love to know a little bit more about you in your early days and your early life. And I think that always kind of gives a nice context to who we are as grown-ups, so we know a little more about what we were like when we were younger.
Sure, that sounds great. I'm so happy to be here. I'm so happy to be doing your podcast. And happy to share my journey and, you know, talk about little Anthony. You know, he was a sweet little boy.
He's a sweet little kid.
What happened? You know, what happened?
What was your, when you were growing up, what were you like as a kid? Were you shy? Were you outgoing? Because I find a lot of actors that I meet, I have a lot of friends who are actors, that they present as quite outgoing, but a lot of the time they're actually quite shy, and especially when they were young. What were you like personality-wise when you were a little tot?
I was incredibly shy. I was very, very, very shy. So much so that I would mumble all of my words and I would hide under hats and basically just kind of keep my eyes hidden from the brim, you know, with the brim of my hat, so no one would make eye contact with me. I was terrified of being seen. And it's funny because, you know, I think when I felt safe to express myself, I had a lot to say and I had a lot to connect with. And I really wanted to connect with people, but, you know, that it was that fear. It was that fear inside of me that really kind of stifled that. And I think a lot of people can relate to that. I think a lot of people, you know, when they feel safe to be who they are or to, you know, connect with people, you feel like a different person. But when you're scared or you're shy or you're unsure, yeah, you feel like there's a barrier keeping you from all of these experiences. So yeah, when I was little, I was, you know, because of my alopecia, I think, you know, I was always unsure of like how people were perceiving me. And I know that, I mean, I think pretty much all alopecians can relate to this. There's an aspect of being exposed in a way, this moment of exposure where you see someone looking and noticing you for like a bit too much longer, and you feel yourself being watched. And it's weird too, because it's not like people are looking at you. They're looking at your condition. And there's a big difference. And I think that's one of the challenging things about having alopecia, especially when you first get it, is people look at your condition and they're no longer looking at you. And it makes you feel like less of a person. And it can make you feel very insecure and unsure of yourself. And it takes a lot. And it takes a lot of work to push through that, push past that, and become, you know, empowered enough that it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think I totally found that. And I found when I was going through it, when I was 15, when it happened to me, and, you know, I have a lot of young people in my life throughout the last 15 years would ask me for advice. And the main thing that I would say to them was find something where your hair loss doesn't matter. Like, I remember going to acting class, and in that safe space, I felt like I could be free and my hair loss didn't matter. And like you were saying, I've never really thought about it like that before. I was being looked at for my talent, I guess, not for my hair loss. And in that safe space, I was able to kind of grow and to, yeah, become more comfortable with my condition. I totally found that helped. Did you find that as well? Had you started to act at that time when your alopecia kind of started, or did the acting?
Well, I was diagnosed with alopecia areata when I was 3 years old, and so it was a bit of a different experience for me, because it was just little spots here and there, and so it's a different experience than you know, kids who lose all of their hair at once. And it's just a total shock to the system. And you're like, well, what's, you know, you can't hide from it, really. Whereas with me, there was this kind of opportunity to hide from it, right? And disguise. The really tricky thing about that is, you know, you become dependent on disguising. You become dependent on hiding. And what that does is it kind of raises the stakes for, I hope people don't find out. I hope people don't see this. And then so when a gust of wind blows and they're exposed, it's like, you know, you that anxiety is so palpable and so real. And you really do feel like even just being seen in that way is, it's like the end of the world. It's like being annihilated. It's like some part of you will be just destroyed.
Yeah, it just makes you feel so vulnerable, doesn't it? I remember, I only actually thought about it the other day when I had alopecia areata. It was similar to you. Mine kind of started in that same level of just falling out in patches. And I remember I was dating this guy, and I probably, like yourself, had my mechanisms to how I would disguise it. So lots of old man sprays, eyeshadow, fucking
totally,
turmeric,
yeah,
whatever you fucking find, you just whack it on your head. But I remember also the kind of go-to was wearing a hat, right? So you would go and kiss boys in the little fields outside your house in Ireland. So I remember going outside, I was going on a date, and, you know, this was the day I was going to kiss the guy that I was kind of texting on my Nokia. And I remember going out and I had my hat on, and that moment when he was leaning in to kiss me, and he then just took off my hat. And it was, I don't think he was trying to do it to be cruel, but I just remember my whole body just sinking and that fear. And I hadn't remembered that situation in such a long time. And it came back to me the other day through a podcast just like this. And I just remember that dread of people finding out, because people knew and people did know, but just the idea of them seeing it was like the most vulnerable feeling I've ever felt in the world. When it was happening to you, did your family know what it was? Did you kind of try and treat it? Did you go down a whole like treatment path? When you first kind of found out and your family knew about it, what were the like the steps that you and your family took at that time?
I mean, thanks for sharing that story, first of all. I mean, that's, you know, that's something that's honestly, it's like, you know, viscerally, you can kind of feel that moment of like the hat being taken off. And I swear to God, just to say something about that, I feel like whenever you wear a hat and try to in order to hide it or, you know, when you're hiding something, it's like having a neon sign over your head for people to be like, I'm going to take this hat off. And it's, I don't know why, but that happened to be so many times where I'm just like, this is my shield. I'm not, you know, letting anyone take this off. And then, you know, lo and behold, people would just try to grab it, try to take it off.
Or even, I don't know if you found this, but for a very long time, I noticed how I held myself in terms of my physical body. When I would hug people, how I would move my head. For years, I wasn't really able to do this because I'd be scared of like, I keep remembering it's an audio, so no one saw me moving my head around like a mad thing. But like, you know, rocking around totally. Your head. And now I notice that my neck is really weak because I think for years I was just like a statue and wouldn't move. And I was so scared of anyone actually kind of coming to touch my head or how I move my body was entirely different.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think it affected, you know, it affected my posture. It also, I mean, it just affected the kind of like the way in which I would face people, right? Or how I would like, I felt myself, you know, kind of moving around a lot or trying to distract people. You know, it's like keep your eyes away from here. And it's funny too, because, you know, one thing that I noticed, which was huge for me, was that when I embraced my alopecia, my acting got so much better because I was no longer, it was a weird thing when I was acting and hiding, because the two things are, you know, like diametrically opposed. You really can't be a good actor and present and also be hiding, you know? And so once I was able to actually just be there and not be afraid of being seen, it upped my game so much more, you know, and a lot of, you know, there's a lot of things that cause that type of kind of body dysmorphia and how it changes the way we move through the world. And we're all conditioned in these ways, and it takes a long time to kind of reprogram from this conditioning and let it go. But it's all the more important that we do that, because life's too short. Life's too short. We gotta enjoy. We gotta, you know, we gotta shake it out. We gotta like, kind of, you know what I mean? Like go in for the hug, and you know, as opposed to, you know, be worried about a gust of wind. The wind is a wonderful thing. I mean, a strong breeze. I'm like, I love it now, you know, whereas before I used to hate it.
I remember I did my yoga teacher training in India. And that's when I told this story before, but I remembered, I was like, I'm not taking my wig with me. This is going to be a really big moment for me. I'm going to go to India. I'm going to do my yoga and just really try and get comfortable with my hair freeness. And I remember for the first time, it was a transformative trip, but I remember for the first time walking outside and feeling raindrops on my head. God, I hadn't had that in so long. I couldn't remember the last time I felt water on my head. And I was sort of bawling, crying on my own in the middle of India, having my little, you know, my acai bowl, very, very white and yogi. But I remember just, you know, feeling that, being like, this is the most beautiful thing, or jumping into that sea and not giving a shit. Yeah. Like, it's just heaven on earth. And I can't believe, and it I'm really so is. Sad when I meet people, because I have my own wig shop now, and I meet women that come in, and of course everyone's on their own path and it's baby steps. But when, you know, the women are doing hot yoga in their wigs, and my heart just breaks, because I'm like, you've no idea the pure pleasure you will get when you whip off that wig in your hot yoga class.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And you're absolutely right. It is baby steps, and everyone's at their own place. I mean, it's, you know, and I, you know, I'm a big fan of wigs. I'm a big fan of, you know, headscarves and hats and whatever makes you feel most comfortable. I'm just a big champion of not doing something because you feel you have to do it, but rather doing it because you want to do it. And I think it can, you know, it can certainly take some time. And my heart breaks for all those people and all those kids as well who really struggle with that precipice, right? The precipice of like, I can't. If this person finds out, if my family or if my school finds out, or even if they know about it and it's like, I don't want them to see it. I don't want them to see it. And there's this resistance. And it's like, if you can only know that on the other side of that precipice is such freedom. Now, granted, it's like, there's bad days on the other side as well. You know, there's times where you're like, oh God, oh, like I'm, you know, I feel free and everything, but you know, people are still mean and terrible. But you know what?
How do you deal with those days when you have those bad days? I'm sure it's helpful because now you're becoming and you are a recognized face within the world. I guess people know you have alopecia, but I'm sure there's other people who do see you and don't know. How do you deal with those bad days? Because I have them too, and I'm just wondering how you internalize those looks or those stupid ass questions in your head. How do you manage those?
That's a great question. I mean, I think that the biggest thing that I try to remember in those moments is that, you know, whatever I'm feeling is valid, you know, like it's also just a feeling. It's a feeling that passes through me, and, you know, I can have this feeling and it's momentary. And so that's the first part of it. But then the next part of it is understanding that, you know, this person who's on the other side has no idea, you know, they don't know. Who knows where they're coming from? Who knows what their experience is? And so, in fact, a lot of the time now when I encounter people who are judgmental or mean or whatever it may be, I see kind of directly into their unhappiness, because they wouldn't be doing that if they weren't unsatisfied with some aspect of themselves that they are then projecting onto you. And that's a valuable thing to kind of carry around, because then you realize, oh, okay, like, oh, this person thinks I should wear a wig, but do they really want me to wear a wig? Or are they the one that's needing to hide? And is my expression of freedom a threat to their fear and to their hiding, right? And so that's, you know, when you put it in that context of, oh, that's their fear, that's not my fear. You know, they're not seeing in and judging me and seeing the truth. No, they're seeing their kind of warped version of themselves. And once you see that, all of a sudden, it's way easier to take things less personally. And it's a great thing to just kind of carry around. I mean, what's worked for you on those, you know, difficult days?
What's worked for me is, so there's two things. I have like my little toolkit, right? So when I'm having a really shit day and I don't feel beautiful or myself, or my self-esteem is a little bit low, I have my wigs there. My wigs have always been that tool to allow me to just present in the world, to be just a part of the pack for people not to look at me. So I always have my wigs there on those days when I'm feeling really shit. I have makeup too, so I get to explore with that. So if I'm out and about and I don't have my wig on, but I have my other armor on, which is my makeup, and I see someone looking at me, I'll think, okay, interesting. They're looking at me for a couple of reasons. They're looking at me, yes, because I look different, but maybe their afterthought is, wow, that girl's bald and hair-free, but yeah, she looks cool and she looks amazing. But when I don't have any armor on, like no makeup on, it's really just me, it's much harder to think those thoughts, but I get there in the end. So when I'm walking down the street, I look like this, no makeup on, totally very eggy, as we would say, and totally barefaced. And I do see people looking at me. I just have to really think and really give it time and energy to think, Wow, they are looking, Amber, because yes, you do look different, but so what? You are different and you're okay with that. And look what you've created, and you are beautiful. So fuck it.
Yeah, so fuck it. Exactly. And also, you never know. You never know either. It's so easy to project, you know, onto a look that someone is giving. You know, I remember being at this party, and I was there with a good friend of mine. And, you know, it was like a very Hollywood party, and there were all these whatever, like, pseudo famous people. And I remember this one guy who was just like staring at me like I was just like I had three heads. And I was like so uncomfortable. And I was like, he is judging the shit out of me. I'm so uncomfortable. Like, what is his problem? Oh my God. Like, can he please just stop looking at me? And then my friend went over and talked to him. And then she came back and she was like, she was laughing. And she said, he's been staring at you this entire night because he loves the fact that you have no eyebrows and has been considering shaving off his own. Like, because he thinks that it's such a look. And I was like,
it's very fashion, Anthony.
And I was like, oh my God, wow. But it just goes to show that I totally missed that, because I was assuming that he was just being judgmental, when in fact he was ready to just,
he loved your vibe.
He was ready to just bick off those eyebrows in a second. And like, and yeah. And so, you know, that was a huge thing for me, just be like, oh, okay. My, you know, perception isn't always the truth. It isn't always what's right. And a lot of time when you're afraid, you kind of fill in the blanks where you know you don't need to. And
And it's funny when, you know, we're talking about eyebrows here. I remember when, so I lost my hair on my head when I was 15. Then I had the most amazing bushy ass eyebrows, most amazing things you'd ever seen. Long eyelashes, they were stunning. And they all left me when I was 19. And I remember that being the hardest thing. And I watched an interview that you had done speaking about the eyebrows and how much of a big thing they were for you. And you spoke about, you know, going out in the world for the first time without any eyebrows on, and, you know, perhaps going for your first audition to not have any eyebrows on. Talk to me a little bit about that, because I know there's one thing losing the hair on one's head, but then losing the facial hair, what was your feelings all around that kind of period of time?
Yeah, it was very jarring to lose eyebrows and lose the eyelashes. It's more of a striking difference. And I use that term striking because I like striking, actually. I think striking is great. I think it's pronounced and cool and different. But, you know, but at the time, it was different from what I looked like, you know, from the previous me. It was very different. So that was really hard for me to kind of transition into, you know, getting used to the way that I looked. And I remember the first audition that I went in for, you know, without eyebrows on. And the reps at the time were like, okay, like, we'll see. And you know what? I felt so, I was a little nervous at first, but to be honest, like, I felt so like I was doing something daring that I felt actually really empowered and very emboldened to just say, fuck it. Like, I'm being me. Let's go. You know, it was a surreal experience because it was like taking a step into the unknown. Whereas before, that territory was just off limits. Because I'm like, oh, well, that's just not possible. And then once I did, I was like, oh.
You opened Pandora's box.
Oh, the water in here is fine. Oh, the water in here is great. Like, oh my, I've been missing out, you know?
Really?
Because I was thinking that it was going to be this frigid, you know, like Nordic sea. And instead, it was like this balmy, incredible, you know, Caribbean, like, water that I was like, oh my God, I've been missing out. And also the casting director was like, I love his new look. So
that was a feedback they gave to the agents at the time. Because you spoke of, so for a long period of time, if I'm correct in this, you had your alopecia areata. It was kind of ebbing and flowing. Obviously, we can touch on perhaps how hard that can be in one's life. The ebbing and flowing of alopecia areata can be so debilitating. But it was like that for a while. And then when you got cast on a job as someone with hair, that's when, on a 9-month job, if I'm correct, and that's when your hair then decided to really be a real dick and then decide to really start falling out quite more severely. And through that period of time, I have a few questions on that, you know, your state of mind during that time, because I know that would have been so difficult for me to deal with. And I'm curious how the industry, you know, did they embrace that? Were they scared of that? How were your agents around that time, the production company? Really curious about how that was managed.
Yeah, well, fortunately, I mean, you know, when that was happening, I had some really wonderful people in my corner. I had a really great group of friends that was kind of being very supportive. Even the producers, actually, when they found out that it was happening, and it was happening very quickly, they were just, you know, in my corner and basically wanted to, you know, make me feel as comfortable as possible. And then at the same time, essentially match in terms of continuity what I looked like when I first started the job, right? And so I think that just on a purely technical standpoint, it was, you know, that was a bit of a challenge, making myself look like how I started the season looking like. But yeah, my agents, I had actually kept it from them because I was so worried that they were just going to not return my phone calls or dismiss me for jobs or, you know, and funnily enough, that did end up being the case. I mean, you know, but you know, looking back on it, it's like what I learned from that experience is that, you know, you think that life is about kind of avoiding your worst fear and just kind of keeping your fingers crossed that your worst fear never comes to fruition. But speaking to this, I think having the experience of your worst fear happen and you still standing there and you still being there and you're not destroyed and you're not ruined or a shell of yourself, it's a really, really powerful and pivotal moment because you're like, oh, it happened. I'm like, my agents don't want to be with me anymore, you know, or like a person or like, oh, this person doesn't want to date me anymore because of this. I was so terrified of that happening. Oh no, it just happened. But the thing is it painful? Yes. But at the same time, do you need those people? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And in fact, they're not serving you. They're not serving you. And this life is only good for being around people who are in service of you and your authentic self. Sorry, I cut you off. What were you saying?
No, you didn't. I'm much more interested in hearing your story. It was just that a similar thing happened to me. As I mentioned there, I've been modeling from a very young age. I started at 15. And as I mentioned, my eyebrows fell at 19. So my London, really big agent at the time, were very happy with me and my wigs because they felt like it was undetectable, it was unnoticeable, it was all grand. So they knew about the alopecia, and they would tell people before I would arrive on set. But once my eyelashes and eyebrows went, this was at the time in the modeling industry where any kind of diversity or difference was not celebrated. If anything, it was pushed back against and people were fucking terrified of it. So I remember I walked in and it was at the time too when my eyebrows were just falling. So they were like in patches. And I remember walking into the agency and I had a H&M gig. So one of the biggest jobs in my career. I walked in with Cara Delevingne and Barbara Palvin, these like supermodels, already feeling like fucking out of place. I was doing my A-levels in school back in Ireland and they flew me over. And then I got fired from that job. And then I walked into the agency and they were like, yeah, so it's not going to work out. We think you should go to India and try and grow your hair back. And I was like, okay, I'll try. And then just left. And then obviously they dropped me up from that. So,
yeah.
But look at us now, Anthony.
I know, truly. And it's, you know, and the, like, And it's crazy too, because I feel like all of those people who were, you know, on the train of like, you need to conform, right? Are now like, well, wait, what sets you apart? Because now what sets you apart is like the thing now. So like, no, that's great, you know? And I'm like, it's so funny just, you know, how fickle those kind of the industry can be. But at the same time, it's like, whatever. That's why I think having this kind of constitution within oneself that is unflappable and deeply rooted in one's own sense of self-worth is so important, because then it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether people dismiss you, because you won't be able to be dismissed. You are who you are. And if they don't accept you, well, their loss. Their loss, you know? And yeah, I mean, I'm sure, but I know. It's like, I remember those difficult conversations with my agents and just them telling me that it wasn't going to work, and that I was never going to act again, and that I also wasn't attractive anymore. And it's so funny looking back on it. It feels like a different lifetime. It feels like a different...
How did you pick yourself up from that? Because that's like a huge blow, when I'm sure you were, like all actors, you know, you're giving everything to this, like your whole life and your soul. And then that does happen. How did you pick yourself up from that?
You know, I think that when you're dismissed in such a way that you feel like, wow, oh, that was just horrible to hear. And I was in tears. I was a mess, you know, and emotionally, I was just devastated in hearing that. But then there was this tiny voice inside of me, which was like, yeah, but what if we can do it anyway? What if we can overcome this? And not only what if we can overcome this, what if we can overcome this and just prove everyone wrong? And that little spark of a voice began to kind of catch on, and it turned into a raging fire inside of me, a raging fire that began to just engulf everything. And it wasn't angry. It wasn't out of spite or wanting, you know, retribution or anything like that. It was actually more about, God, I've been so afraid for so long, and I'm tired of being afraid. I'm so tired of being afraid. I just want to be myself, and I'm going to be myself so hard that, like, you know, it's like, who cares? Who cares what happens? The ground is going to shake, and that there's real power in that. There's real power in that. And once I stepped into that power, people were like, oh my God, yes.
Like, they saw it.
Who is this?
And like you said, when you came into yourself, not only were you obviously evolving and growing as a person personally, but then also you said in turn, then your acting and your acting work was getting better and better. So you probably saw that. So then you were just like, yeah, let's do it even more and more.
Totally. It was all, you know, authenticity, as opposed to trying to be a certain thing, trying to conform, trying to look a certain way, act a certain way, position myself in a certain way. I thought that it was very much about kind of being prescribed as opposed to being real. And then once I was like, oh, there's real, you know, connection, power, and just this definitive connection in realness that people respond to, you know, when someone's authentic,
it's like a light.
Yeah,
it's like physics.
It is. It really is. And it lights up in other people too. When you're being authentic, it like lights up other people's authenticity, or it lights up their fear. You know, it scares people.
And how far into your hair-free journey did the wonderful show Barry come about? Had you been auditioning for quite a while as a hair-free man? And then tell us about that audition process, how that all came about.
Sure. So basically, I had been essentially since like I think I was like 29 or something, where I really kind of embraced it. I don't know. I need to check my calendar.
Check the calendar.
I need to check the calendar. But
what day did I embrace my alopecia?
Totally.
Yes, November 29th.
totally. But I had been, I had done a couple of things. I'd been on like The Flash and I had done Gotham. And, you know, those were two really incredible like experiences for me just because I was like, oh, this can work. This can work. And I was, you know, at the time, I could only see myself as certain characters, certain things. And, you know, I was limiting myself, but I was also, in my mind, I was just being realistic. But I was limiting myself. And then, you know, this thing came across my manager's desk and she called me. I remember I was in Bed Bath & Beyond, which is a fitting place for, like, this, you know, Hank to be born out of. I got the call from my manager in Bed Bath & Beyond. And I had my stack of 20% off coupons. You know, and she said, there's this Bill Hader HBO project. I think you're perfect for it. Like, I'm really excited by this one. Take a look. And I started reading it in Bed Bath & Beyond. And I was like, oh, this is so fun. Wow, this is so much fun. And a lot of it, you know, funnily enough, the audition itself was just not too much talking, more just like listening. But I don't know. I felt like I responded immediately to the character. And fortunately, I mean, I went in for Sherry Thomas, who had also cast me in Gotham. So it was a very warm room. And this character began to kind of bubble up. And I just started having fun. I had no idea whether it was going to work or not. But then, yeah, Sherry, we had to start the tape over because she was laughing so hard. And so I was like,
oh my God, that's like, always a good
sign. So I was like, oh, okay, this is good. I can keep having fun. I can keep having fun with this. Yeah.
And in the character breakdown, did it say anything about how Hank looked?
No.
Or was it just?
No, not at all. Not at all. And in fact, I talked to Bill Hader prior to, well, he had watched my audition and, you know, he did the thing that was just can be so like detrimental to an actor who's like still in the audition process, which is telling you what worked. You know, because as soon as someone tells you what worked, you're like, well, can't do that anymore. Because if, you know, someone comes up to you while you do a take, you know, or after you do a take, and they're like, that was so funny when you said this way. And you're like, okay, cool. And then you do it again, and no one laughs. And you're like, oh, God, this is terrible. So but anyway, but like Bill had, told me everything that he loved. And then I was like, so about my alopecia, do we need to like have any backstory about that? And he was like, oh no, I didn't give it any second thought, you know? And I was like, oh, that's so cool. This is great.
That's so
this is
cool.
Great. Yeah.
I can't tell you, like, that to me makes me so happy because with me in my modeling career, when I have done some wonderful work with brands where I am there because I have something to say and I am kind of ticking a box of diversity or inclusion, which I'm all about if it's an authentic purpose and all the rest of it. But the jobs I love even more is I'm just being hired because they like my look and just because I'm just a model and that's fantastic, not because of anything.
Right.
It's just because I'm doing my job.
Yeah, that's it.
That's fucking brilliant.
That's it.
And I think with acting, I kind of fell out of love with it a bit because I just wasn't getting to the place where I really wanted it to, but I never got to explore enough because the roles I was going up for, I did feel were so limiting where it was, you know, and I'm all about it, about, you know, the alien or the girl from outer space and all that. Don't get me wrong. That's actually more crack to me than playing the girl next door, which I never got to play anyway. But that's one thing with your career as well. I know you spoke of that kind of fear of one being typecast, but who wants to play the guy next door? It's quite boring. And even if you are playing the more interesting characters, it's a good thing. There are more characters that are in depth anyway.
Yeah, exactly. There's so much nuance to it. And they're way, yeah, I think way more fascinating. And I think that was the brilliant thing about Barry is each of the characters moved from this place of you think this character is this one thing. You think this... you know, Chechen mobster who's just goofy and sweet is like this one thing. And then you begin to kind of peel back the layers and you see all of this nuance and you see this character change over the course of all of, you know, of these seasons because of what happens. And I think that that's so fascinating and so interesting. And, you know, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're playing that character or, you know, the guy next door or the girl next door, or whoever. If you have brilliant writing and you're you know, in good hands, it's like, then it's great. Yeah.
It's so exciting. I think it's just so, so cool. Like I touched on at the beginning, that's what's so amazing about seeing you on the TV. It just allows us to remember that it's okay and that you can just be. I remember, you know, I take it as such a gorgeous thing when people say that it's inspiring to see what I'm doing and in terms of my career and things like that. But more than anything, it's probably just really nice to see someone just living life, just being normal, just living life and getting on and being comfortable and happy. Like for me, that's the biggest inspiring thing out of all of this, do you know?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And in fact, like, you know, I light up. I light up when I see, you know, like models like yourself doing campaigns and just, I'm like, oh, yes, yes. I light up when I see fellow actors, you know, with alopecia who are just, you know, who are just rocking it and looking amazing and just being fully authentic. But I also am so, I love it just being on a street in, you know, Budapest or being on a street in New York or Los Angeles or wherever around the world. And just seeing someone walk by and being like, oh, yes, yes. They're like,
do you give them a nod? Do you have like an alopecia nod?
Yes, you have an, like, there's like, hey, absolutely buddy. An alopecia nod, you know. But I just, I love it. I love it because we're, you know, we are a community and we do have to kind of, you know, look out for each other because there are so many kids and so many adults who really struggle and who don't have the network or support system that they deserve to have. And I think it's, you know, it's a really difficult thing. It's a really, really difficult thing. And not many, and I feel like it's downplayed because people are like, well, it's just hair, you know, they're like, well, there's worse things, you know, there's cancer, you know, or, you know, you could actually have something really wrong with you. And to that, I'm just like, okay, cool. Shave off your eyebrows. Right now, shave off your eyebrows right now, like, and just go throughout your day. It's a very different experience in the world when you feel like your identity is shifting in this way based on how people look at you. It is a subtle thing, but it is a very, very, very impactful change. And the dismissal of that importance, I think, is it's really damaging, you know, because when you're having this experience and you're really depressed or you're really, you know, going through it and someone just says, well, it's just hair. It's just hair. Yeah,
get a wig. You know? It's great.
Get over it. Oh, my God. You're a guy. You know, being bald is okay for a guy. It's fine. You know, it's all of those things. It's ultimately dismissing of pain, of what, you know, the pain that someone's in. And
do you have any theory around, oh, I'm in the dark. Do you see? Or maybe I need to walk. Ross, will you walk out there? Maybe it's because there's sensors. I'm in my husband's, oh no, we're good. It's the sensor.
Oh, okay, cool. I was like, is there a power outage?
I'm in my husband's office and I think this is on a sensor. Do you have any theory on why you got alopecia? Do you have any theory of why it happened?
No, I have no idea. I mean, I think, you know, for the most part, autoimmune conditions are, you know, they're just kind of a mystery. They're a mystery. And who knows why? It's like your light going on and off. Who knows? But like, but truly, I mean, I will say that, you know, the lessons that I've learned from alopecia, I would never have traded those lessons for a cure, ever, ever, because you get to know yourself in a way that is lifelong. It lasts your whole life. Once you learn what acceptance is, and it is a fast track to acceptance. if you allow yourself to take those steps, if you allow yourself to venture out into that territory, it really does like shift your whole perspective on things. And again, it doesn't mean that like a switch is flipped and you're just like, you know, kind of zen on the mountain, like always happy with yourself. You're not. Like, you're going to go through bad days. You're going to have difficult times. But knowing what I know now, I would not change a single part of the process at all. You know, I had to go through a really long process of self-acceptance. And you know, and now when I talk to kids with alopecia or talk to adults with alopecia, it's like, you know, it is about, you know, sharing my testament that like it works. If you can just try to, you know, be good to yourself through this process and accept that like, you know, your approval is the only approval that matters. It's yours and it starts with you. And it doesn't matter whose approval you get. If you don't have your own approval, it won't matter. You're going to keep searching for others' approval and it won't matter. It will not fill that void. You have to be the one.
I love that. And do you find when you were going through it at the stages in your life, did you have that sense of community or was it something that you were seeking? Did you feel like you had support or did that only come in like in later years?
You know, I had support in the sense that I had friends who, you know, when I opened up to them about it, were very, very loving to me and would, you know, were very accepting of it. I didn't know anyone with alopecia until I was, you know, 26 and I met someone with alopecia and I didn't realize how disconnected I was from what I needed, which was, feeling that kind of representation, even just sitting across from you at a coffee shop, just knowing that like someone has shared a similar journey made me feel like I was whole again. Like I had connected in a way that I was always just never truly aware of. And so now when, you know, in terms of like the alopecia community, I feel like I'm just making up for lost time. I love it. I love talking to people with alopecia and encourage anyone who's listening. Just if you have alopecia or if you know someone with alopecia, like come say hi and you know, share your story or just come connect. Because I love it. I really do.
Well, honestly, it was so amazing to be able to speak to you and to share our stories together and to hear your stories. And thank you for just being so vulnerable and open and for coming on this small little podcast.
Are you kidding me? It's been so much fun. I've had such a great time and it's been such a wonderful conversation. And we'll have to do part two at some point. So, you know,
we'll do part two, 100%. And again, as I mentioned at the beginning, you are a really big inspiration to me. And I know everyone else in the alopecia community is just like roaring your name. And we're just so delighted that we have someone as brilliant as you representing us, and you're just a bit of a legend. So thank you so much.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. Thank you so much.
So I hope you guys enjoyed that episode. I know it meant so much to me and I really left that conversation feeling really inspired and just really full. So I'm just so grateful for Anthony for existing. You're amazing. We all love you. Us in the alopecia community, we salute you. So I hope you guys enjoyed that episode just as much as I did recording it. And if you did like it, then please do subscribe because we have some amazing guests coming up and I really want you to be able to listen to all of those. And you can follow my journey as well on Instagram if you like, and you'll be the first to know what guests we have at Amber Jean Shop. And if you did enjoy this podcast and you wanted to tell us your hair-free journey or just your hair journey or any thoughts or questions or whatever it is, then please do email into us at thismaygethairy@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing from you. And until next time, guys, see you later.